Mosquitoes made big news last summer on the Oregon coast when they swarmed the Bandon Marsh National Wildlife Refuge. The refuge had to take action to get the mosquito population under control. And right now, the Fish and Wildlife Service, which manages that refuge, is taking comments on a mosquito control plan for this year and an environmental assessment for tidal marsh restoration at the refuge. The comment period for both of those things closes tomorrow. This gives us a chance to talk more generally about mosquitoes, though, and mosquito behavior. Jim Lunders is with Jackson County Vector Control, where he's the manager and a biologist and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Jim, good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
You did have a little bit of involvement with the Bandon Marsh situation last year. Weren't you consulted for some of the work?
As the U.S. Fish and Wildlife was starting their planning process, they invited myself and several other mosquito control professionals to give them advice on how to do the mosquito control work.
And is it something that they just weren't prepared for out there, or was it just that they didn't have anybody nearby because of finances from the counties over there, or what?
Well, Coos County doesn't currently have a mosquito control program, so I am the closest. This is the closest district to Coos County, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, they don't have any mosquito control people that knowledgeable in mosquito control working for the agency, so they sought outside help from us.
You know, since most of the human population seems to want to run headlong away from mosquitoes, or at least slap them when they show up, I mean, what makes somebody get interested enough in mosquitoes to make it their life's work in your case?
Really, for me, I of course started out as a summer job while I was going to college, but really once you are in this very long, the health impacts to humans from mosquitoes, it really becomes a very fulfilling job when you see how important controlling mosquitoes is to protecting people's health and well-being.
So what are some of the issues? I mean, we can probably think a few things up by ourselves, but I mean, what are some of the things you've had to deal with that are health issues that arise because of mosquito populations, particularly in Jackson County where you live and work?
West Nile virus has been a huge issue since it came to this country, and it's proving to reoccur year after year. We also have the impacts to pets and other animals in this area, especially dog heartworm, which is spread by a local tree hole mosquito, is a big problem for pet owners. And West Nile and the other encephalitises have a huge impact on the horse population too. So,
all right. So more with livestock, are the effects greater on livestock than on people? I mean, I guess the issue is that people can at least spray on insect repellents, and horses and cows don't tend to do that.
That's correct. The big thing is, you know, if mosquitoes get really bad, people can go inside. You know, livestock or your pet that might be outside, they really don't have any protection from the mosquitoes. So they're at greater risk just because they get more mosquito bites. The impacts to people can be a lot greater just because of the severity of the diseases.
Every time we start prepping for a segment to talk about mosquitoes, I am just amazed once again at, and I know we end up using pictures of Anopheles mosquitoes on our website, which is probably not technically correct for this region, but there seems to be a great range and variety of the critters.
Yeah, so in Oregon we have roughly 45 species. It depends on who you talk to. It's between 40 and 48. Here in Jackson County, we routinely deal with nine major species, and then there's about 15 total, but really nine species. And of those, three or four are really the major concern.
All right. Well, you mentioned the tree hole mosquito, which causes dog heartworm. That's a new one to me. I mean, is that considered one of the majors?
Yeah. Besides causing dog heartworm, they're also very vicious biters, so they're a major nuisance problem with the public. So people will notice them. They're very aggressive biters. They're one of our major species, and then we have the Culex species that are the main vectors of West Nile virus and the other encephalitises.
Culex mosquitoes. So are Culex and Anopheles mosquitoes different just species? Are they different genuses?
They're different genuses. Yeah. So the Anopheles mosquitoes, we do have a few of them here, but those are primarily those are the malaria vectors, which doesn't tend to be a problem this far north. And frankly, organized mosquito control has basically eradicated malaria from the United States. We might have one or two cases nationwide each year.
Well, interesting that you bring up organized mosquito control, because you did mention the fact that it is obviously still present in Jackson County, where you work at Jackson County Vector Control. But Coos County, you mentioned, doesn't have a vector control program. Can we assume it did once? And is this a trend where, as counties drop off services because of tight finances, they're losing vector control?
I don't believe Coos County has had a vector control district. If they did, it was a very long time ago. They haven't, at least in my 20 years in the industry. Generally speaking, vector control districts, they are created in areas that have historically had mosquito-borne disease. And what generally happens is, after a long period of time, when those diseases are either eradicated or don't show back up, people become complacent and the money gets spent other places, and then things show up. So it's since West Nile, there's been an increase in vector control districts in Oregon, but it's still relatively, there's only 19 districts, so there's a large quantity of people in the state that aren't protected.
All right, 19 districts for 36 counties, which is, you know, not going to cover the whole state. We're talking about mosquitoes here on the Jefferson Exchange. Our guest is Jim Lunders from Jackson County Vector Control, manager and biologist. You can ask your questions about mosquitoes or tell your mosquito stories. We have one phone number available to you, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Why the one? Well, it's spring fund drive time, so the other phone lines are allocated to the phone pit to take pledge calls. You can reach us by email, though, unimpeded, jx@jeffnet.org. If you call the phone number and you get a busy signal, please keep trying. So, Jim, is there a great difference in mosquitoes from place to place? So, for example, when they were dealing with the mosquitoes at the Bandon Marsh last year, are those very different from the kinds of mosquitoes you'll see in the Rogue Valley?
There's a lot of similarities, especially within the genera. So, you know, all the Aedes mosquitoes are fairly similar. All the Culex mosquitoes are fairly similar. So they have major differences. Usually the best way to describe it is we have two main types of mosquitoes. We have floodwater mosquitoes and permanent water mosquitoes. Floodwater mosquitoes lay their eggs on the ground, on dry ground, and then when it's flooded later, those eggs hatch. Those mosquitoes tend to be more aggressive biters. The Culex mosquitoes, they lay their eggs on the permanent water mosquitoes lay their eggs on the surface of the water, and those mosquitoes tend to be they're less aggressive biters, but those are the ones that tend to spread the most diseases.
Are mosquitoes indigenous to the region? I mean, did they travel in here? Did they hitchhike along with white settlers or something like that, or were they always here?
No. So all the species we currently have here are all indigenous to the area. Basically, what's happened is we do have diseases that have been brought in, like West Nile, and it just happened that the species of mosquitoes we already had are capable of spreading those diseases.
All right, so it's not like a new mosquito came in with West Nile. West Nile came in with the old mosquitoes.
Yeah, we are seeing with our modern society, with lots of things moving around quickly, we are seeing invasive species of mosquitoes coming into this country. Two good examples are Aedes albopictus and Aedes japonicus, which are both mosquitoes from Asia. And last year in the Fresno area of California, they had a species, Aedes aegypti, which is the yellow fever mosquito, was brought into the area. So it's, unfortunately, we're starting to see more of that as well.
Brought in how? I mean, how do they hitchhike in? I keep using the term hitchhike loosely. I know it's not the scientific term.
But so those species are all container breeders, so it's relatively easy for them. They actually prefer to lay their eggs in artificial containers, and when those are later filled with water, then the larvae hatch. So if you have, say, a used tire or a large flower pot that they've laid their eggs on, and you move across the country and you fill it up with water and don't notice the larva there, they can hatch into adults. So it's a, unfortunately, it's been a problem.
So have things changed greatly over time, over the course of even your career? I mean, the kinds of diseases that are coming with mosquitoes. I mean, you mentioned West Nile, obviously a big change there, but are there changes in mosquito behavior or the kinds of mosquitoes we're seeing? Other than the ones you just mentioned coming in. Yeah.
I think the biggest change is we're seeing these viruses and other diseases coming into the area from outside. West Nile was the first major one. Chikungunya, which was on the CDC's watch list, it's now made it to the Americas. It's now in the Caribbean. So we're probably going to continue to see diseases that before were only affecting, you know, populations in other countries. We're likely to continue to see those diseases come here. And, you know, it's only an 8-hour plane ride away from anywhere in the world just about now. So if we have a species of mosquito that is competent vector and can spread that disease, then if it gets here, then we could have problems.
Jim Lunders, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, manager and biologist at the Jackson County Vector Control District. We're talking about mosquitoes. You can join us. Our single phone line today, 800-838-3760. If it's busy, please try again or use our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. West Nile cases, I mean, it seems like every one makes the news, but there really haven't been that many, have there, in Oregon?
Oregon has been relatively lucky. There were several thousand cases of West Nile nationwide reported last year, and over 200 people died. Unfortunately, diseases like West Nile, even though the numbers relatively are low of people that get the severe form of disease, the impacts both physically and economically are huge to those people. Generally speaking, if you get the severe form of the disease, you're sick for a very long time, and you may have lasting health effects. Often they have polio-like symptoms, and so those people can the impact to the healthcare system is huge with people that have those lasting health effects.
It sounds somewhat similar to Lyme disease, caused by ticks, I know, not mosquitoes, but the same sort of lingering effects and some paralysis and things like that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's greatly varied, and so it's important for people to protect themselves, because even though it may seem like a remote chance, there's effective ways to reduce your risk of contracting those diseases, and we really encourage people to not take that risk.
What are some of the ways in which people can, in particular, prepare their property to make sure that they are not leaving breeding grounds for mosquitoes out there?
So, one of the ways we like to describe to people is they should really, when they're thinking about mosquitoes, think of the three D's. The first one is drain. So, with the recent rains, go around your property and look for all those buckets or wheelbarrows or anything that could hold water and tip those over. Anything that can hold water for a week can produce biting, flying adults. Also, the other one is dress. When you're outside, if you can dress in light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, that greatly reduces the amount of mosquitoes that are, one, attracted to you, and two, are able to bite you through your clothing. And then the third one is defend. It's really important that people use a EPA registered repellent according to the product label. So the first thing you should do when you get an insect repellent is, one, make sure it's EPA registered, and two, read the label and put it on according to the label.
You know how sometimes you go to the pharmacy and the pharmacist wants to talk to you about how to use the drug? They should probably do that for the pesticides, you know? Have you ever used this pesticide before? Well, then the guy at the counter wants to talk to you. So drain, dress, and defend. I'm curious about why the light-colored clothing to repel mosquitoes.
The mosquitoes tend to key in on large dark objects, so it just they tend to pay more attention to the person in a dark blue shirt than the person in, say, a white shirt. So
okay, so just make sure if you're in groups of people that somebody's a darker clothing than you have. I'm sure people want to know, obviously, the ways of eradicating mosquitoes have gotten very different. I remember learning in elementary school about getting a handle on malaria and yellow fever by pouring oil onto the surfaces of ponds so the little guys couldn't stick their breathing tubes up and they die in the water there. Obviously, can't do that anymore. But I'm sure there are people who want to know, are mosquitoes a necessary part of the ecosystem? I mean, there must be something that feeds on them that would need mosquitoes to be present in some form, as annoying as they are to humans.
I mean, fortunately, with mosquitoes, there's a lot of aquatic invertebrates, and because of the way mosquitoes develop, there isn't really any species that relies solely on them. So, fortunately, when we're removing mosquitoes from the environment, we're not causing a huge impact to those species, and that comes in. What comes into play there is what products we now use. The majority of the products we use for larval mosquito control are actually naturally occurring soil bacteria that only affect a small segment of the insect population, primarily mosquitoes and black flies, both which bite people and are and can spread diseases. So by only controlling them and not killing all the other aquatic invertebrates, we have a smaller impact on the environment.
All right, so not much of a food chain up there from the mosquitoes, then, it sounds like.
And the main reason for that is, you know, mosquitoes, when they come off, it's similar to when the wildebeest have their babies in Africa and they're all born within a couple of days. Well, the lions eat a whole bunch of baby wildebeest, but they get full, and so the majority of them live. And it's similar with mosquitoes. When millions of them hatch the same day, they're a big food source for a couple of days, but they're quickly gone. And so if there weren't all those other aquatic invertebrates in that water, then those, if something relied on mosquitoes, it would have a long time between meals.
So. All right. Well, remember these three D's, though: drain, dress, and defend. And the dress part is wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing to make yourself less attractive to mosquitoes. We always learn a lot when we talk to you. Jim Lunders is manager and biologist at the Jackson County Vector Control District. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.